You're listening to a podcast of spurious morality.
In space and time.
Dun 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 ba-da-dum ba-da-dum ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba.
You're really jumping on this idea of alternative theme tunes. I like it.
I still say we should do an a cappella theme.
I say you should do an a cappella theme, yeah.
We've done that before.
We have.
Play the theme.
Play the theme.
And welcome to a podcast of spurious morality. I'm Connor, and today we're joined by Johnston.
Hello.
Hello. And we're here to talk about the adventures of the First Doctor, Ian, Barbara, and Susan, but not necessarily as they were on TV.
I really thought you were going to go not the Doctor you were expecting, and I was going to have to sort of break down like Crichton in Red Dwarf, like, oh, how could you? Like,
so you have sunk to that level.
Every time Paul McGann gets mentioned and people go, oh, not the Doctor you were expecting, it is actually reaching the level of like, take me to your leader. That's what we're dealing with.
I just think we should have like a little 5-second burst of canned laughter that's been cut out of a longer track. And it just starts very jarringly and ends very jarringly every time he says it now.
Or just an audience booing.
No, but it's such a good line.
But not the line you were expecting. Anyway, let's go on with it.
Yes, we're here to talk about Big Finish's First Doctor Adventures, starring David Bradley and the cast of An Adventure in Space and Time. So this came about, if I remember rightly, it was a little bit strange the way it came about, because Big Finish had the idea to do a First Doctor series, a full-cast First Doctor series with the Adventure in Space and Time crew. Around about the same time, the BBC had the idea to bring David Bradley into Peter Capaldi's last story. And this got announced after he had been announced for it, and it was done almost like a sort of crossover, like, oh yes, the First Doctor is going to be on TV, and at the same time, David Bradley's going to do a series on audio, which I quite liked. And I remember this was actually released, I think this first set was released on Christmas Day, just after Twice Upon a Time finished, and I quite liked that there was that little bit of synchronicity between the TV series and Big Finish that one time.
I think they did River Song, the same with River Song the year before, didn't they? After Husbands of River Song, didn't they?
Yeah,
drop?
I think
presumably
so.
The first River Song set, I think.
I think it was, yeah. And then they stopped. I don't think they've done a Christmas Day release since then. Like, I quite like that.
I mean, they've not done a Christmas Day episode since, until Church on Ruby Road.
That's true. That is true. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of this series. I'm a big fan of David Bradley's performance as the First Doctor. But let's get into it then. So we're going to talk about the first three box sets, which is the first six stories in this series. There's two others that come after that we're not going to cover today. I think we're going to maybe circle around at some stage in the future and do those.
But when Big Finish released the sixth set.
Yes.
When we have six more stories to discuss, that's when we'll do it. So we're holding Big Finish hostage.
We will not do
any more First Doctor Adventures episodes until they do some more First Doctor Adventures episodes. Let's see who breaks first.
So I think these six stories form quite a nice little series. A good start and a good sort of it's quite a good bridge, this little group of six between Doctor Who season one and Doctor Who season two on TV. And it begins with the Destination Wars. Tell us what you think of the Destination Wars.
This is great because it's a nice little comfortable 1960s style Doctor Who story that plays on quite a few tropes from season one, you know, the TARDIS being uncontrollable and all this kind of thing. But it has the Master in it, which is obviously its big kind of different selling point. So it's a nice little mesh in styles. And I've often seen some debate about these David Bradley First Doctor sets. Like, are they just going for like solid season one? Are they trying to make Doctor Who from 1963-64 on audio? Or are they trying to do it in the style of the new series and, you know, have some sort of different styles going on? And I think this one it's weirdly somewhere in the middle. It sort of sets this out as its own thing. It's like, this is the kind of story that you probably wouldn't normally get with the First Doctor, or you wouldn't have got in the early adventures, which were kind of on the go at the time. This is something fairly unique. I really like how it uses the Master's sort of hypnotism and manipulation of people, and it sort of manages to turn the TARDIS team against each other a little bit. It kind of plays with that question of who are the Doctor and Susan without revealing anything, in a very sort of season one, season two kind of way. There's all sorts going on here, all kinds of different styles, all sorts of ways of doing Doctor Who, I guess. But I guess you have got that sort of predominant season one feel going on.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of this as well. I think you're right in saying that I think their stated philosophy for the series is that they set out to do 60s style stories, like a high concept sci-fi and a pure historical story in each set. That's true, that's there, but it feels like the approach is maybe more along the lines of, what if Verity Lambert had the resources that Doctor Who has in the 21st century? It feels like those stories and that sort of philosophy, but on a wee bit of a bigger scale. Like, it doesn't feel like, you know, when you're listening to this, it doesn't feel like you're imagining tiny little three-wall sets, that sort of thing. I do sort of see these with, like, modern-day production values in my head. I think they sound that way. But there's nice use of sort of 1960s sound effects and 1960s-style sound effects, just with a wee bit more of a modern twist. So I think that works really well. Obviously, we're getting the very, very the Doctor's first meeting with the Master here after, you know, the both of them have left Gallifrey. And that does feel like, you know, very early days. I do like that the Master then, you know, that it sort of retroactively makes the Master the Doctor's arch nemesis right from the very beginning of the Doctor's time, rather than, you know, popping up halfway through the third Doctor's era. And I quite like the way the Master's written in this. He's not quite the moustache twirling villain that he, you know, is later on in life. He's a little bit more of a cool and calculating scientist, which feels quite good, you know, for the 1960s, you know, like a 1960s era Master. So I think he's written very well. Yes, as you say, it sort of plays with Ian and Barbara's lack of, it's not a lack of trust. I think they do trust the Doctor and Susan, but it sort of goes into why they should or shouldn't trust the Doctor and Susan, how much, you know, that's the sort of thing the Master's playing on here, which is very, very effective. And I think that works very, very well. So I'm a big fan of this story. It is very basic. You know, you could sort of say the plot's maybe a little bit by numbers, sort of the Master setting two sides up against one another. That actually does come back in some, you know, certainly, I was going to say in some of this incarnation's later stories. I think the Home Guard feels very similar to this. But I quite like that, you know, the Master as that cool and calculating scientist playing two sides against each other. So I don't mind that too much. I just really like, and I think it's a good, I don't mind that sort of slightly simpler story for a series opener as well, because it gives the cast a chance to sort of bed in and find their feet. So I really enjoy this story. It's probably the one I really listen to most out of the range, purely just because I like that sort of 1960s Master story feel, and I think it stands alone quite well. So we'll move on then to the second story in the first set, which is The Great White Hurricane, which is the first of the pure historicals. Tell us what you think of The Great White Hurricane.
It has big Finnish American accents. Otherwise, though, I really like it. I think it's a good sort of adventurous historical, and it's not somewhere or an event, or a place or an event that, or a time that Doctor Who would have visited in the 60s. It's something that we can only kind of do now, 50, 60 years later, through the power of Big Finish. And I quite like that, because again, it just sort of meshes that we're making 1960s Doctor Who, but we're making it in, was it 2017 this came out? Mm-hmm. I think that's great. I think it's really work. It's a decent sort of adventure story. It plays out a lot like the actual historicals of the time. It works. It fits. It fits perfectly well. I think it's just the, like I say, the time and the setting that make this one unique. It's a good story for all of the cast having something to do as well. You know, a lot of 60s Doctor Who is accused of, well, a lot of Doctor Who with three companions, I suppose, is accused of sidelining at least one of them for the sake of the adventure. This one, everyone has something to do. And I really like the fact that we've got the cliffhanger following, well, the cliffhanger in the previous story that's followed up on in this one as well, which in this case is Ian getting shot, which is a bit of a dramatic take on the usual end of story cliffhanger in the 60s. Usually it's, oh, the TARDIS is landing somewhere. Where will it be? This is a bit more action-packed, a bit heavier. But yeah, it's a good story. It's a nice use of the historical format, and it's a great place to put these characters. And like I say, it does something that we don't or wouldn't normally get from this TARDIS team.
Yeah, I always sort of struggle to decide whether I think the historical stories or the sci-fi stories are the stronger out of this range, because they're obviously doing very different things. I quite like the historical stuff, which I feel like you know, I'm repeating myself every time I say this. You know, I say this on paper, I'm not a huge fan of historical stories. I much prefer the sci-fi themed stuff. But there's just something about the historicals in this range that feels so rich and satisfying. I have a very, very vague recollection of not being taught, but maybe being told about the Great White Hurricane, or certainly about the, you know, the winter freezes in New York when I was in school. As I said, it's only a very vague recollection. It's not an event I knew very much about. But obviously, with this being set during season one and two of TV Doctor Who, it's still in that sort of more educational mode. And we do get a lot of, like, we get a bit of a history lesson from Barbara, which if Big Finish ever want to release a range that's just Barbara Wright giving history lessons, I would be first in the queue for that. But this is good. I enjoy it. I think it's a great story for the companions, because as you say, they all get split up and they all get something to do. I think Susan probably comes out about the strongest, because she ends up sort of paired off with this gang member for the whole story. And there's a good bit of conflict between her and him. Eventually, you know, it starts off with him kidnapping her, and that, you know, obviously that generates conflict. But they, end up becoming, because of the storm, they end up becoming sort of allies to one another. They have no choice but to rely on each other to try and survive. And I think Susan obviously sees more in him than he sees in himself and tries to bring that out, but still gets a few shocks every now and then when she hears about the sort of things that he has done as part of the gang. I really like Ian and Barbara's strand as well, where they're trying to reunite Rosalita with her son, and they're battling, you know, the injuries that I think a lot of New Yorkers would have probably had at the time. Ian with his concussion, Rosalita with her broken leg, sustained because of the weather, or Ian, in his case, you know, being grazed with the bullet. So I really, really enjoy it. It's nice to dip into maybe a lesser known historical event like this and get a Doctor Who history lesson on it, and getting this, it's a wee bit of a sort of suspense thriller at times as well, with them all trying to survive either against the weather or the gangs and the police as well. So I quite enjoy this one. But we can move on then to the second set, which the first story of which is The Invention of Death, which I get the impression just generally is probably the highest regarded story in the range. What do you think of it?
I think it's quite rightly one of the highest regarded big finish stories end of. It's utterly brilliant, one utterly brilliant and bizarre concept, and it really sort of highlights the impact of the Doctor's travels, which, you know, at this point are very, very carefree. You know, there's very little consequence in Doctor. I know we've had, you know, when you think to season one, we have Barbara with the Aztecs, and, you know, she cannot change history. She does not have any meaningful impact on that story, despite trying so hard. And this story kind of takes the opposite approach. This story takes these characters and their traveling, it does have an impact. It can have an impact. It can completely change things. It's a Dorney script, and it's one of Dorney's best, and Dorney has had some best. Dorney has had some brilliant stories, and I put this right up there. I don't think this is something that we'd have got in 60s Doctor Who at all. I know I keep making these comparisons, but I just don't think we'd ever get anything like this in telly Doctor Who at all. I think this is one of those stories that lets Big Finish just be so out there and creative. I struggle to think of any criticism for it, except maybe it's kind of hampered by the four-part format. Perhaps it could be 10 minutes shorter. I don't know. But it's just full of wonderful ideas, full of wonderful characters, and it doesn't really have a villain, because everyone kind of just panics into reacting the way they are when this utterly weird and ridiculous situation is thrown upon them. It's a really memorable story. It's an absolutely wonderful script, and it's these regulars just, I think, at their best. I think this has the best performances from each of sort of the new season one team as well. So it's just a long list of things to love, really. What a fantastic story.
It really is incredible. I have always rated it very highly. I do agree that the pacing is maybe a little bit strange, in that the first half of the story does seem to take, it doesn't, not that it takes too long, it seems to be quite sedately paced compared to the second half, and it sort of goes from 0 to 100 almost. It speeds up very quickly, but it is such a fantastic story.
I kind of like that as well. I know I said it does go on a bit, and you're right, the first half is very sort of lackadaisical, but it just means that it's even more of a gut punch when something actually happens, because you're kind of listening to it and you're kind of going, well, where is this going? What's going to happen here? And then stuff starts happening and you go, oh my God, what happened there? And it's just fantastic.
It is incredible. I think it's sort of, you know, tying it into the wider fabric of Doctor Who, it sort of justifies the whole Time Lord non-intervention thing, because from the very minute the TARDIS lands wherever this is, and it always feels to me like it's not quite an alien planet. It might be somewhat slightly mirror, like slightly alternate pocket dimension, almost at times. I like that sort of ambiguity. But from the very minute the TARDIS lands, Brenna and Sharlin, in their laboratory, notice that some quality of their world has changed simply because the TARDIS is there. They don't know what it is. All they know is that it's on the hillside and it happens as the TARDIS arrives. So the TARDIS and its crew, by their very presence, change something about this world. And then the Doctor and his companions, simply by meeting the people of this world, the Ashtalans, they alter their outlook on life and their, you know, they introduce the concept of death to them. And it completely and irreparably changes this whole species, just by instilling a sort of curiosity in Sharlin, which she then acts upon. So it does sort of go into that whole, you know, time travel and space adventure and the Doctor's travels changing the things where they arrive. Because a lot of the time, like, the Doctor and his companions just slot into events. Whereas this, as I say, that's their presence is the driving force behind the story. So that's fantastic. It's a really good take on a Doctor Who story before you even get into how it fits in with like the first Doctor's era and this particular series. So I think it's great. As you say, it would not have been done on BBC TV, certainly in the 1960s. I can sort of see it being done now. But even then, it feels like something that it feels weird and something that the production team on TV might think they're taking a risk on. So you're right, maybe it wouldn't be made on TV, but I'm glad it's made here in this format because it's just such a wonderful ride and such a wonderful thing to listen to.
I don't think it's a big enough spectacle to be on TV.
Yeah.
And it, as daft as it sounds, it's not a bad thing, you know, obviously TV is a visual medium and Doctor Who is one of the biggest things coming out of British TV. It has to be a spectacle. It has to be big. It has to be armies of Daleks. It has to be the Doctor hanging on a rope ladder off a spaceship. And there's none of that in here. It's a very, very... well, I would say human tale, but it's not. That's the point. But it's very, very character-based. It's very, very slow-paced, and it focuses on relationships, and it focuses on existential concepts, and it works well on audio because you have to think about it a bit more. You have to imagine it a bit more, and it's something that asks you to think more than, I'd argue, a lot of television drama at all. I don't think it's big and epic enough for TV, which it's not a criticism of TV. It's certainly not a criticism of TV Doctor Who. But I think it's one of those stories that just works so well because it's an audio drama.
Do you know what one of my favourite scenes in the whole thing is? It's the bit where Ian is in the lab and he's trying to explain to the Ashtalans what death is. And they can't get their head around it because obviously they have no concept of it. It's not something, they have never experienced anything like it before. And Ian's fumbling around. He's saying it's like, you know, to us humans, it would be like, and he's totally lost for words. He can't think what it's like from his point of view because obviously it's something that he would have no concept of. So I think that's a great scene. I think Jamie Glover as Ian is one of the highlights of this range. I think he makes the role his own, maybe more than the others do. And I really, really enjoy his performance. I love listening to him playing Ian. So I always think of that scene when I think of this story. Because it just drives the whole point of it home. I think that the Ashtalans can't comprehend death because it is just this totally alien concept to them. So it's great. I also really love it's the campfire bit, or I can't remember if it's around a campfire or if it's in the TARDIS, But the Doctor and his companions sing London's Burning, and it feels like something only that particular TARDIS crew would do, this little sort of morale-raising activity that they do together to keep their spirits up while they're out, you know, lost in the universe. It's just a really charming wee moment. And we also get the, you know, it's me going into the obligatory continuity reference bit, but we get the explanation for why Sarah Jane Smith in Death of the Doctor says she finds out Ian and Barbara haven't aged a day since the 1960s. So that's quite satisfying as well, that actually, you know, that they do sort of, they don't confirm it, they just sort of suggest it, that it's this story that causes that for Ian and Barbara, and I quite like that.
You know, I've never put two and two together on that before, but you're absolutely right.
That's where it comes from. That's,
yeah, I think, of course.
Tony said he wanted to explain.
Yeah,
it's left a bit ambiguous that you can do it. You can think of it as yes, Sarah Jane was right, or the rumor was wrong. But it's there if you want it either way.
Yeah, no, that's great. I genuinely never sort of made that connection before, but yes, absolutely.
So we'll move on then to the next story, which is The Barbarians and the Samurai. Tell us what you think of this one.
It's a fascinating story. I think as far as historicals and being to educate go, this is perhaps one of the most educational. This is really in depth. It really kind of gets stuck into sort of the culture of Japan at the time, and it was a subject that I really genuinely didn't know anything about when I went into the episode. It's just not a period that I've ever explored. And I came out of it feeling as though I'd learned quite a bit. And, you know, obviously, yes, it's Doctor Who. It's not real. We have to take everything with a historical pinch of salt. But I think it's really well done. It's a really well-crafted historical story. And it's definitely an interesting concept to have the white middle class English characters as the other characters that are sort of aliens, you know, in a foreign land and shouldn't be there. And it's quite creepy. It's quite a weird concept because it just doesn't happen very often in any kind of fiction at all. And I think it's a good story to show. Kind of opposite to what I said about Invention of Death, I think this would be an absolute cracker on TV. I think it would be brilliant. I really think it would have worked well as a season one historical.
I can see it being like very visually, you know, stunning, I suppose.
I can see it. Imagine they'd have done it in between Planet of Giants and Dalek Invasion of Earth. It would be season two's Marco Polo. It would have been fantastic. It's a good story. It's a bit run-of-the-mill historical. It's easily compared to various other things. But, I mean, the plot is essentially, to some extent, the Time Warrior, but with the Sontaran taken out. But it works. It's nice. It's a bit based on the CG. It puts the characters into an immediately hostile environment. It's a good story and sort of uses the we're making a 1960s historical but slightly different idea really, really well.
Yeah, I always enjoy it. It does feel, as you say, it's a little bit strange. It's again, all of these stories feel so different to one another. But as you said, this does feel very educational. That feels like a very strong element of it. When I was talking about, you know, the Barbara Wright history lesson thing earlier on, I thought of this story as well. So that feels like a major element. I quite like that we get a little bit of a glimpse into Barbara's past when she says that this is the period that she wrote her university, you know, dissertation on. So she's, you know, very well placed here to be an absolute expert in everything that's going on around them and the dangers that they face as a result of it. I enjoy her interactions with Lord Mamoru and Keiko because obviously she's objectified as a Western woman in Japan at that particular time by Lord Mamoru. and he comes on very, very, very heavily and very creepily to her. And Barbara does her level best to resist it while trying to keep herself alive, obviously, and not to the extent that she gets herself killed, but she's very clearly not happy to be in that position. And I enjoy her conversations with Keiko in that respect, because Keiko feels like she's very clearly chafing under her father's rule and is not looking forward to being married, because she knows that she will chafe under her husband's rule as well then. And I like the little bit where Barbara, you know, she says, I think it's something along the lines of, you know, are all Western women like this? And this one certainly is, that sort of thing. So that's a great little relationship between Barbara and Keiko. I like that Barbara acts as a sort of mentor to her and encourages her to stand for herself, stand up for herself, really. So that's quite good. I like that base under siege aspect. That's very, very strong in the last episode in particular. Ian gets to do his chemistry thing as well. We get a bit of a chemistry lesson from Ian on how to make smoke bombs and eventually how to make poison bombs. I don't think that would ever fly on the BBC. But that's, again, feels like it's tying very strongly into that educational aspect of early Doctor Who. So that makes it feel quite strongly themed, and I quite like that.
I just love the idea now of there being like a tie-in on Blue Peter. It's like, today, kids, we're going to make Ian's smoke bombs. And here's one I made earlier. I can't see you, Peter Purvis. Where are you?
Yeah, it feels a bit strange that they're giving away, like, yes, this is how you make smoke bombs, and this is how you make poison bombs as well. So that's quite good. I like that little bit, you know, I like that that's sort of little bit of theatre that the Doctor and Ian work up to get themselves to different parts of the castle at different times as they need to be, you know, fighting with one another and sort of getting into that. So yeah, I like this story. My only concern is if they were ever going to do a story like this again. This feels like almost like you're being read stuff out of a textbook at times. I think if they're going to do something like this again, I would like it to be written by someone of a Japanese background or of an Asian background, because it does feel very strongly written from a Western point of view, looking in at Japan. And this is all treated as very odd and alien almost at times. That's us looking in, I think, from a Western perspective. I think it would be good to get this sort of story from someone, you know, who is from that culture and that, you know, whose history this sort of belongs to. I think that would be good to do in future for this sort of thing. But as I say, I really do enjoy this story, and it's the historical, I think, I've listened to the most of out of this series. I keep coming back to it just because it feels so, it does feel quite expansive. And as I say, this feels like a very rich historical. You're getting an awful lot of historical detail as well as the actual, you know, Doctor Who story of it as well. So I'm a big fan of it. But we'll move on then to the third set, which begins, they swap the order, they do the historical first in this one. It starts with the Phoenicians. Tell us what you think of the Phoenicians.
You see, I've only ever listened to this sort of immediately after Barbarians and the Samurai, so it is quite jarring when listening to these sets in order, sort of as a series, to go from one historical to the other, because you kind of approach it going, okay, sci-fi one now, and it isn't. I think that when you compare it to Barbarian and the Samurai, I don't think this is as good. I still think it is very, very good, though. Obviously, it's examining a very different society and period in history, and the previous story is set in near enough one location, whereas this is a nice historical journey type story. You know, I said before, Barbarian and the Samurai might have the sort of production values of Marco Polo. This has got that sort of journey aspect that, you know, the characters are moving to different places. Some really brutal stuff in there, like a really nasty sort of execute your slaves by running over them with a boat scene. Like, that one wouldn't have made it to telly. But yeah, for the most part, it's just a good, solid historical. Having this been the third that we're talking about here now, it does start to feel by numbers at this point. I think I need to listen to this story separately from the historicals in the other sets, because it kind of just gets muddled up in sort of a series of fairly similar stories, and it's no fault of its own. I just think that most historicals actually probably do follow the same plot. But yeah, it's not a bad story. There's a lot to enjoy in there. And it's, again, it's a period of history that isn't exceptionally well known. It's a society that's not exceptionally well known. You know, we don't all, it's not like when we did the Missy episode the other week, we said absolutely everybody in the UK knows about the gunpowder plot. It's not like that. So again, I feel as though I'm learning a bit by listening to this, which is never a bad thing.
This feels like it's taking inspiration from a couple of different ones. I think there's a little bit of Marco Polo in this one, where it's the Doctor and his companions, you know, joining a historical figure for a long journey. There's a bit of sort of, there's a wee bit of the Mythmakers in it as well, I think, with the Doctor acting as this, he takes on this role, and this is like an envoy from the gods, and gives the princess, Elisa, a lot of hints and tips on, you know, what she needs to do to get where he knows she needs to be. I really like it. I would probably mark this out as my favorite historical in the series. I keep coming back to it for a couple of different reasons. This was the one, I think, where the performances of the cast feel most similar to the original season 1 and 2 cast. I think this is where I think I could see a lot more of William Hartnell's Doctor in David Bradley's performance in this one. He's a little bit more upbeat. He's a little bit more twinkly and a bit more mischievous isn't the word, but there's a little bit more of a glee in him in this, I think, just in that he's witnessing these events and he's fascinated by them. He's a little bit funnier, a little bit sharper. It's a really good performance from David Bradley in this story. I think he's great. This is also the story, I've mentioned this when we talked about this little run of stories very briefly in one of the Coffee Bar episodes recently. And I mentioned this then. This set and this story ships Ian and Barbara really hard. And there's a lot of sort of romantic tension between them and between Ian and Elisa. Elisa's determined to make Ian her husband, and Barbara very clearly does not like it. So I think that's great territory to play about with, you know, for those two characters, for Ian and Barbara. It's something I don't think necessarily. See, the thing is, I have not watched an awful lot of black and white Doctor Who. I have certainly heard more of this team and this cast than I have seen of like the originals. But I really like this. I think it feels like much more modern territory. I don't know if there was that sort of thing in the original stories to any great extent. It feels very strong here, and I really like it for Ian and Barbara. I just really enjoy listening to it. I think it's very satisfying. The only problem is it can't really build anything, because obviously we know where Ian and Barbara are going. We're not getting any sort of tension or suspension from this. Where, you know, we're not wondering, it's not a case of will they, won't they, or will they, won't they, where it just feels like we're building towards that sort of thing, even though we're not really, because this series can't do that because of where it fits into Doctor Who's chronology. I don't care. I still enjoy listening to it. So yeah, I'm a big fan of this one. I like how bright and summery it feels. I think the sound design is great. It really captures that sort of, you know, like really bright, summery, hot climate, I think. I can't explain that. That's just the That's just the impression I get from the story and from, as I said, the sound design. I just really like it. I often find that even though I think something is not the best, I can still say it's my favorite. I think that's the case here. I just really enjoy listening to this one. But we can move on then to the last story in this. As I say, I consider this little six-episode run to be a series, and then from box set four, it feels like the start of another series, like season two, of these First Doctor adventures. The last story that we're going to talk about today is TikTok World. TikTok, I can't say this now without thinking of TikTok the app. This comes from the era before TikTok, I think, or at least I remember it. I don't remember
TikTok. A world before TikTok.
Quite. this one, it just tears the cast apart and tears the characters apart, breaks them down, and it makes for wonderful storytelling, I think. Tell us what you think of TikTok World.
It's one of those stories, I get the impression that other people enjoy quite a bit more than I do. Not to say I don't like it. I really like what it's trying to do. In fact, I really like what it does. And you're right, it does tear the cast apart. It is a big emotional kind of story. It adds so much weight to Susan's departure in Dalek Invasion of Earth. It's another one of those that I kind of just wish was a bit shorter. It's a short story. Like when you look at the episode lengths, it's like 21, 22 minutes, you know, and the average is 27, 28, 29. It really does feel like there was a really, really strong two-part story here. And it just got stretched to four parts, which in, I guess, many ways is very authentic for 1960s Doctor Who. Carol Ann Ford's brilliant. Like, I guess it was a really obvious thing to do with this range, you know, to stick either Carol Ann Ford or William Russell into it at some point. And I think it is done incredibly well. It's approached incredibly well. And it's so good to have a Susan-centric story. We don't get them much. We never really got one on telly. Here we do. We finally have one. And younger Susan meeting older Susan is never really, we're never really told it's older Susan. We know it's older Susan because it's Carol Ann Ford, but it's kind of left all a little bit mysterious and a bit, but yeah, it's really, really good. Like I say, it just feels like it could have been a much tighter story. And I think that's perhaps something that in future sets, maybe we'll start seeing two-parters instead. I'm not sure, but I definitely think there's room for shorter stories in this range. It doesn't have to be four-parters all the time. And I think this is just an example of why that's the case. And, you know, since this, we've seen other ranges kind of really diversifying length of stories. We've had one-parters, two-parters, three-parters, four, six, seven. So yeah, maybe moving forward, maybe when they do another set, hinty hint hint hint, hurry up, big finish, that's something we could look at. But yeah, it you know, not to take anything away from the story, it's a very good story, and I can understand why it's as beloved as it is, but it's just, when I think of something like The Invention of Death or Destination Wars, this definitely feels like the weakest of the three sci-fi ones in these three sets for me.
I get that. I really do. And yet, in the same way I think The Phoenicians is not the best historical, it is my favourite. This is not the best sci-fi. It might be my favourite. I just love what it does with the characters in that TARDIS crew. I think it feels like it's very specifically written for the First Doctor, Ian, Susan and Barbara. Like, it couldn't really be done, I don't think, with any other TARDIS crew, because with Ian and Barbara, it ties in with what I was saying about the Phoenicians. It ships them very hard. Ian sacrifices himself to save Barbara, and then she is so utterly heartbroken that she just gives up and lets the Zesto take her. It's a really powerful moment. I remember listening to it thinking, I can't believe that this has played out the way it has. I think it's absolutely right that it feels right. It, you know, it feels proper to the character, like true to the characters. But I can't believe that it's happened, and you feel properly gutted, both when Ian and Barbara, you know, when Ian and Barbara die effectively. I always feel that is a really proper gut punch moment. That's a sideshow compared to the Doctor and Susan story, though. This, as you said, feels like a really strong setup for Susan's departure in the Dalek invasion of Earth, because it adds, as you said, so much weight to it. It sets up the Doctor's mindset behind leaving Susan on Earth, where, you know, he has come to realize because of this story that she needs to be able to stand on her own two feet out of his influence, and he needs to give her the space to do that. It couldn't have been done with anyone else. It has to be written for the Doctor and Susan. Very right and proper that Carol Ann Ford was brought in for an appearance in this, and it feels wonderful to hear her meeting David Bradley's Doctor. It feels fantastic hearing her interact with him, and they have this sort of like slightly combative relationship where, again, they're sort of, they've been thrown together by circumstance, and they sort of squabble a little bit. But it's the moment when he realizes who she is. It just feels so, again, as I say, right and proper. Like, it's the Doctor recognizing his granddaughter, and just in that moment, it feels absolutely right. Even though it's not William Hartnell, it's David Bradley. It feels so properly First Doctor. That moment takes place there, and he meets that older version of Susan, and it's Carol Ann Ford playing her, you know. I just really like it. I think it's an excellent character piece, and I keep coming back to this set, because I think it is, as I say, it's my favorite out of the three. I just love how it handles the characters out of that TARDIS crew. I think it does it so well and so satisfyingly, and makes the most of it makes the most of them that it can, because of, as I say, it's slightly hamstrung in that this is not an ongoing series. We know where it fits, and we know how these characters' storylines end on TV. That restricts it slightly. But it's one of those things where the journey is more important than the ending. I just get so much out of this set and this story and how it handles that TARDIS crew. So please, Big Finish, please do more with them. I want to hear this crew and this cast again. The last set, volume five, ended on a cliffhanger. We're still waiting on that being wrapped up. Please, more soon. Please, please.
Seconded.
It's an odd series in that it on paper is trying to recreate the 60s. In practice, it feels like it's doing 60s inspired, but very much its own thing. It feels, I have always imagined it as, what if BBC did Doctor Who spin-off, you know, First Doctor era spin-off after Twice Upon a Time, after An Adventure in Space and Time. That's very much what it feels like. Like a Lost BBC 4 spin-off or Lost BBC 2 spin-off, set in a more classic era of Doctor Who, but very much made for today. So I'm a huge fan of that. I would love to hear more of that from Big Finish, something that feels, that has a flavour of the original era, but is being made for now. That's a fantastic approach for this sort of thing to take. I think it works really, really well, and this whole series is just a testament to it.
If there's one thing that you can say about this, it's that it doesn't feel like more of the same. It really does feel like its own thing. And it's because it's got that mashup of styles. And yeah, it just works. It works so fantastically well, to the point where fans of 60s Doctor Who, there's a lot for them to like. Fans of New Who, there's a lot for them to like. Fans of just really good storytelling, you know, experimental storytelling. We've got two, Invention of Death and TikTok World, we've got two very, very experimental stories here. And I'm not sure that there are many ranges you could get that kind of experimentation in from Big Finish, or even that many eras of Doctor Who, TV, audio, book, comic, whatever. I think we're getting something pretty unique with this run, and I hope it sort of re-emerges at some point because of that.
I said earlier on, each story feels very rich. Each story feels very self-contained. I think something that helps this whole run, this whole range, is that it has a set format. In that you know what you're getting in each set. You're getting your historical and you're getting your sci-fi. I think that helps as a listener going in, because you know roughly what to expect. But each story feels so self-contained and strong and focused that you're getting something a little bit different. Not even a little bit, you're getting something very different between each story. You know, the Destination Wars is nothing like the Great White Hurricane, which is nothing like the Invention of Death, which is nothing like Barbarians and Samurai, and so on. I like that. I that particular style appeals to me, where you're jumping around into something very strongly themed in different, you know, in subsequent stories. It just really works, the whole format, and it's one of the few ranges at Big Finish that has a very deliberately set format, I think. I think it just works really, really well, and helps you as a listener sort of know what to expect, know what you're getting in for. And that always helps me when I'm listening, you know, that it's not to say that the stories aren't surprising. As I say, TikTok World has a couple of really strong gut punch moments. But I think maybe it's for writers going in, knowing what they're going to write, knowing what sort of thing the series does. There's just something about it. And I think that format is the reason why, this range feels so strong to me. But I think that's maybe all we have time for. Thank you very much for listening to us, and I'm sure we'll come back at some stage in the future to do more on the other stories in this range, if Big Finish ever release a sixth, please and thank you.
I refuse to talk about sets 4 and 5 until they do.
Fair enough. With that, I'll say thank you and goodbye to Johnston.
Thank you.
And thank you and goodbye to you, our listeners. And we'll be back for more Spodcasting very soon. Goodbye now.
I'll be in charge again next week. It's okay, listeners.
He only thinks that. I'm here to stay.
Well, we've already recorded next week's.
Oh.
But apart from that,
just do me falling into the time vortex. Bye-bye, my dears.
I'll throw in a sound effect here. That'll work.